Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the Fort from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life, in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic: are black people responsible for? Not to excuse or relieve Europeans from accountability for the atrocities they set upon black peoples, but What are black people actually responsible for as willing or unknowing co-contributors to their own utter destruction? Are black people without fault, without responsibility or accountability for their detrimental behaviors, or are they simply the byproduct of over 400 years of extreme intergenerational, physical, social, psychological, and spiritual trauma? Now, black folks have been captured, conquered, debased, and stripped of their culture and language, but still black folks thrived as inventors, lawmakers, soldiers, doctors, scientists, educators, healers, entrepreneurs, civil rights and human rights fighters, heads of families, heads of communities, and masters of our own lives. We had such places, believe it or not, small utopias that were eventually interrupted by white folks. Yeah. Like we had, I guess you know, the Black Wall Street, Rosewood, the most famous ones. So we had something going sometimes, and that was some time ago. Not too long in a distant past. Anyway, regardless of the pain, we must stop the violence, the neglect, and the abuse, and give ourselves a chance to heal. Because it seems like we just running around with an open wound, bleeding profusely. And we need to, just need to put the brakes on the things that we can put the brakes on. And we can. It, no matter how hopeless it seems, there's certain things that we, I think we have power to do that we're just not doing. Or don't want, some of us don't want to do, because it doesn't take a lot of people to, doesn't take a lot of poison to poison a well. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not even like I'm saying that everybody is poisonous, but everybody must take part in the healing. And I mean everybody. Well, they should anyway. This is not intended as an indictment of black people, but a call to black people to wake up and get off the hamster wheel of death. Because we're going nowhere but to the grave. Waking up daily, all this trauma, raising our cortisone levels, contributing to our disease state. And our poor decision making. By December 2020, Philadelphia's homicide numbers had reached a familiar high, 499. It was the second highest in the nation, only second to Chicago, who had 769 homicides. Mind you, New York and Los Angeles, more than twice the size of both of these places. And I don't wish that on New York or Los Angeles either. Don't get me wrong. I don't wish this on anybody. Anyway, the Philadelphia Tribune said on January 4th, 2021, Philadelphia marked 2020 as its most violent year in three decades, with black residents overwhelmingly the victims. Black residents overwhelmingly the victims. The homicide rate for the 20s, as I said, was 499, a figure up from 40% from 2019. See, something's wrong with this picture. From CBS News, Chicago gun violence. Most of Chicago's killings have been concentrated in five police districts on the city's south and west sides, where neighborhoods struggle with gang membership, high unemployment, and poverty. Now, you can guess predominantly who lives in those Chicago districts. Majority of who resides in that those districts where they're having these shootings. I heard people say, we don't make the guns. And I've heard people say, guns don't kill. Guns don't kill. People do. And there lies a problem. Because both of those people are right. We don't make guns, but we do use them. Many use them in inappropriate ways, in monstrous ways. Then there's the issue of drugs. And first is the setup. If you want to subdue a people, get them to accept or desire their destruction. Even more, get them to be dependent upon their destruction, and they will utterly destroy themselves. So that means if I'm dependent economically on the destruction of my community, I'm going to sacrifice members or some members of my community, and those people come from the suburbs who may not look like me. Right? I'm going to sacrifice whatever life to my interest, my capital interest to be exact. Flip side of that is, this stuff makes me feel good. You know, I think better when I'm using it. I feel better. Some people might have better sex. They develop a habit. Crutch. I party good with this stuff. I got to stay up and study. I need to go to sleep. Whatever. They develop a dependency. And voila. We have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. It's like drugs are like roach baits. The adults or providers or first line of defense is decimated when they perceive drugs and poisoning the body as an acceptable, right? Focus, it's okay. Entertaining, hey, party, exhilarating, yeah, I feel good. That, you know, all profitable. And, it, you know, all those are very, very strong things. And a part of a rite of passage, you know, you get a certain age, it's expectation, or is it you're expected, or, you know, you're allowed to, you know, indulge. So because this drawing an age to drugs only says it's okay to use drugs. As we know, age doesn't mean much when it comes to getting something you want, especially something as simple as drugs. Feeling good becomes the result of an external chemical interaction we soon become powerless over. Success becomes perceived as how lucrative the drug trade has become for the individual, regardless of the trail of bodies that lay in its wake. Coming up is based on your ability to perpetuate the destruction of others and generate currency and ultimately wealth. It is a narcissist's point of view. And we know narcissists do not play well with others. From CSUN Education, they said the U.S. government is the biggest drug dealer in the world. Blasphemy, right? Especially around nowadays. But I know you guys probably heard of this. This is nothing new. It's a part of history, or it should be anyway. They say while the U.S. federal government has been waging a phony and hypocritical war on drugs as an easy way to increase repression in inner cities and confiscate millions of dollars in private assets through unconstitutional forfeiture laws in order to fund its burgeoning police state, it has also been an active participant in the illegal drug trade, using public resources to bring heroin and cocaine into American inner cities, at least since the 1960s. Now, I know we had a show on TV, it was, I think it was a story about Rick Ross, or he was one of the characters in it, or a character like him was in it. And Rick Ross himself was speaking on this whole cocaine thing and how he was introduced to that and how he became Rick Ross, not the rapper. Anyway, as the author goes on and talks about how it sounds like paranoia, somebody saying something like that. You know, he said the fact is this information was confirmed by scholars and researchers throughout the past three decades. Any honest scholar, and this man is talking about honest scholars, so you got to be aware of whose material you read. Any honest scholar that has researched the issue will tell you the truth. They will find little information about it in the mainstream media. Mainstream media wasn't covering this, right? And the most recent scandal involved the Central Intelligence Agency. That's the CIA, right? That's those James Bond-like type characters, suit-wearing, sunglasses-wearing dudes, right? Selling crack cocaine in South Central Los Angeles in order to fund the U.S. covert war against the people in Nicaragua. Now, this is no secret now. We know it's no secret now. We know it's true. But at the time when that was a hard story to break. And it's involved in the CIA selling crack cocaine. I guess that would be. Anyway, they say the CIA's heavy involvement in the drug trade, and especially the crack cocaine trade, has been well documented by scholars such as Dr. Peter Dale Scott. At least since the Iran-Contra hearings in the 1980s. Y'all remember that? Ali North is in that. I think Ali North took the rap. He was the fall guy. They said the mass media are only now beginning to take notice, right? And even when they take notice, most of the sheep-like journalists and anchor people continue to parrot the absurd government line in contradiction to the blatant facts. Sounds like a conspiracy to me. Sounds like somebody's in control of something, right? Cover up, which are available to anyone who reads beyond the corporate summaries of government press releases. On NPR, for example, a reporter commented that since the story wasn't picked up by the New York Times, it must be false. I guess the New York Times doesn't lie. So they didn't pick the story up. Really, you believe that, you're crazy. Another reporter on Fox News said, there has been no direct evidence. Repeat, no direct evidence linking the CIA to crack cocaine, to the crack cocaine trade in South Central LA. Anyway, I'm not going to go into the whole thing about that. That's only this links of information about the CIA's complicity in the drug page. There were like 39 references. I cannot even mention all of them. The Dark Alliance, Contras, Crack, and the CIA. Media focus on CIA's cocaine link is long overdue. A short article by Norman Solomon, dated October 1st, 1996. Media war over CIA and cocaine. Media war, y'all. All right? Also by Norman Solomon. Crack reparations, right, argues that the U.S. Government should pay reparations to South Central Los Angeles for destroying communities by bringing in crack cocaine. Good luck with that. Who lived in South Central Los Angeles? I think their skin wasn't light enough to get anything. How the CIA created the crack epidemic. Story from the Revolutionary Worker. Ex-DEA agent Costello tells all. Expert from Costello's book. Excerpts from Costello's book. Power Burns. All right. I'm using some cuss words in here. It's no need for me to be cussing right now. Anyway. Chronology of events. Excuse me, y'all. Outlining the CIA contra drug dealing. And there's a whole bunch of them, all right? It's like 39 of them. It's a bunch of them. Where did I get this article from? I don't even think I recall. Oh, csun.edu. That's where I got it from. Y'all can check it out if you're interested in listening to that. But I said that to say this, how, you know, some people say we don't make drugs. We don't manufacture drugs. You know, we didn't put the drugs in our community. It's true. According to these folks right here, we didn't do it. But my question is, just because somebody dropped a pound of horse shit in your community, are you going to step in it? You can put it up your nose, shoot in your veins? There's probably somebody out there that would do it. Probably somebody. Somebody would say yes to that. But you have to have a predisposition to use substances in order for that to even work. That's like dropping unloading a 16-wheeler full of pigs in Iran somewhere. No, it's not going down. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's going to start jumping on those pigs and start eating them. Don't eat pork. Anyway, from Wikipedia, the U.S. federal government is an opponent of the illegal drug trade. However, state laws vary greatly in some cases contradict federal laws. Despite the U.S. government's official position against the drug trade, U.S. government agents and assets, that's people helping them, right, have been implicated in the drug trade and were caught and investigated during the Iran-Contra scandal, implicated in the use of the drug trade as a secret source of funding for the USA support of the Contras. Page 41 of the December 1988 Kerry Report to the U.S. Senate, right, stated, indeed, U.S. policymakers were not immune to the idea that drug money was a perfect solution to the Contras funding problem. So, yeah, there is some truth and weight to the argument that, hey, we didn't create this problem, right? We didn't land on crack landed on us. I get that. But, you know, did we have to poison our community, ourselves with that? That's a lot of information. All that being true, how black people respond to someone dropping a boatload of poison and a truckload of guns in their community is crucial. In fact, it's a matter of life and death. And I think that's not an exaggeration. Not the only thing that's killing us. Children are known to put things in their mouth that they shouldn't. Without proper education and supervision, a child is subjected to his curiosity and, as they say, curiosity killed the cat. Is that how far some of us have come? Are we merely as impressionable and curious as a child, incapable of learning from the misfortunes of others, cursed by our oral fixation and desire for pleasure? Is that how far some of us have come? The penalty seems worse than the crime. Shall we continue to be a dog that consistently bites our hand and blame the owner or the pet store? Do we not see our part in this play, in this tragic play? A child can pull the trigger of a gun without respect for the life and safety of others, even his own life. It is simply because the child does not understand the gravity of taking a life. He is shielded by his ignorance, lack of understanding of the value of life and the instrument of death and the permanency of death. As a child, children will, they're curious. And, you know, they don't really have that concept. I think we had I don't know how that went. We had a 12-year-old give a 9-year-old a gun, and he shot his sister in Philadelphia. I heard the 9-year-old said, "Mommy, don't worry. She'll wake up tomorrow," or something like that. I heard something. I don't know how true that is, but that really kind of hit me. Wow. You think his little sister's going to wake up? Concept of the gravity of death. Killing a man does not make you a man. It makes you a murderer. We need to understand that. I hear some people, somebody says something to that effect, being a man. Well, man has to deal with many things. But murderer is specific, and it deals with the illicit killing of another human being. Make no mistake about it. It's not a rite of passage. We cannot rally around the murder of another human being. A man is not a child. And the expectation and accountability is far greater. A man who does not value life chooses to live in ignorance of respect for the value of life and the permanency of death. In doing so, he surrenders his protective responsibility, thus rendering the community vulnerable to invasion and assault. See, because us men are supposed to be nature's protection. Just like the, animals protect their communities and stuff like that. Even the lions, even though the female lions do a lot of hunting and stuff like that, when they have big trouble, that's when you see that male lion come out. What's the problem? What's going on? When he come out, he ain't playing. Because he's there to protect the pride. Well, we're leaving our pride wide open. We might as well be hunting them down, putting their heads on the wall ourselves if we were lions. That's the equivalent to some of the things, the atrocity that we're doing in our community to ourselves. If we were lions, we would be hunting, killing, skinning, and stuffing our own people, putting them on walls and museums and stuff like that, wearing coats of them, of people. That's how bad it is. That is selling out and turning out the community. Because I know we talk about sellouts, but we usually think of a sellout, the guy that makes it, and then he jumps out of the black community, don't want to associate with black folks no more, only associate with a certain type of person of color. He has no love for the hood. And I can understand a guy trying to jump out of the community though once he gets some money. I understand it. I can't see a guy worth a couple of million dollars still living in the hood. I hear people say that they live in the same neighborhood. But that puts him and his family at risk, because there's some fools around there that will do some kidnapping and some robbing. So, for him to be that accessible, it's quite dangerous. Plus, he wants his kid to get a good education. And he's not going to send his kid to the school across the street, which he knows they use the same books he used when he went there. And so I kind of get that. But I don't get the hating where you came from. I get why you leave to be safe and to improve your quality of life. I get that. You want to walk down the street without ducking bullets. I get that. You want to come outside, a bullet not in your car. I got one in mine. I get that. You want your kids, you want to feel like your kid's going to make it home. You want to feel more comfortable about that when they leave the house. That they're probably, you have a very good chance of them returning. Well, in the hood, we know how it is. So, that sounds like shooting yourself in the head at the same time. The man, y'all know who the man is, right? That sounds like shooting yourself in the head at the same time the man is shooting you in the head. Becoming a co-defendant and a victim in your own homicide. Some call it suicide. Some, genocide. It's going to take for this stuff to stop. And it's not that everybody's doing it, but it's a lot of it. 499 murders. Over 700 in Chicago. And it's not that LA not doesn't have a high count. It's just not as high as that. We still have homicides going on in all these other big cities and smaller cities and some rural areas. But why? You know, and I know that once somebody's, you know, dead, murdered, you know, that's a blood, you know, blood for blood, eye for eye, tooth for tooth kind of thing. I get all of that. Seen it. Get it. We're going to get you back. You know, we're going to get one of y'all. Get two of y'all. Whatever. You know, I don't know. Just got, I mean, we need to really put the brakes on some of this stuff that's going on. You know. But like I said, it was no demand for crack cocaine for getting high. We would have crack cocaine would not have any impact on our community. Crack, heroin, Monster, which is a methamphetamine, for you guys don't know. You know, Christmas trees, beauties, syrup. You know, if we did not have but demand, then demand means a desire, the inclination to use, those things would not have an impact on our community. It would not have had such a large demand of curiosity. It would not have had the impact that it did have on us. They would have to drop that white bomb somewhere else. That's not the way it went down. The Equal Justice Initiative. Nixon advisor admits war on drugs was designed to criminalize black people. You got the man, you know, because I know this is what people are saying, like, well, but we don't make the drugs. We don't make the guns. Okay, well, now you got people dropping a white bomb in your neighborhood and locking you up for taking advantage of that. So that's like a pendulum. It's cutting, it's swinging to the left, swinging to the right. It's going to get you one way or the other. Get you hooked on drugs, selling drugs, court or jail, death. After President Richard Nixon declared a war on drugs in 1971, y'all remember those years, right? The number of people incarcerated in American jails and prisons escalated from 300,000 to 2.3 million. Oh, we have a caller. Hello, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Salam alaikum, Colton.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I want to add a little endpoint from probably singing to the choir with my statement, and we all probably know the scenarios, but it was just like a real attack on our mental. We seem to always, hold on for one second.
You.
Sorry. We was always able to overcome the struggles and persevere and move on. So coming out of the 60s, the black families were a little bit more united. Going into the 70s, you know, some people worked for a lot of the factories, a little bit more self-sufficient. That made white men look weak. They didn't need that. They needed us to stay at the bottom so we can be dependent. And I think they had already started that setup with media, movies, and planting the ideas in our heads.
Superfly.
With blaxploitation, Superfly,
Superfly,
all of that kind of stuff. You know, so they already had the propaganda and already opened up the doors, you know, glamorized it, which is what it is today. You know, it's glamorized. But the thing about it is that everybody that's doing it is not winning, but everybody trying to get in it. Not everybody, not all of us, but the ones that are in it. They're
right.
Idiots because it's not going nowhere. It's a vehicle that is only designed to take you two places, dead or either in jail. And they'll go with both of them because they make money off of both of those. But I think it's similar to what's happening today with the immorality of our society. It was already planted in the music, television, magazines, books, and we seem to always like to parade with those things and jump on board with it no matter what it's saying. You know, we already accept immoral way of lifestyle. In fact, it's like we're dancing to our own destruction. Everything that's wrong for us, we seem to, excuse the expression, party and bullshit to it.
Mm.
We make fun of it. We make fun of it. You know, we sing about killing people. Rap about killing people. You know, and then when killing is in the neighborhood, it's almost like I told you, you know, this is what we do.
Right.
So I'm starting to believe we become the people that they said we are. And, you know, it was like a mental hypnotism. Because there's a lot of things that we could do. We didn't all get together on that and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, we're separated too. We separated. So information ain't going to get out there because we already have our own ills and separations in our households, in our community. So I think we need to get back to one source. And I don't know if it's a religious source. I don't even think we can use religion as that source, but I think we need to get back on board as saying we are the target and we're at war and we need to band together just under those terms.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we can start seeing protecting each other, and then with that protection, maybe we can get rid of some of the things that's destroying us because people, you know, had a need to protect something. But it seemed like to me nobody's willing to protect anything. You know, everybody scream, we got to protect the kids, but they don't want to get out there when you got somebody saying, let's build these schools. They ain't willing to put their money in, but they want to say, let's protect them. You know, so to me, it just seems like everybody got the super white man hero syndrome. We waiting for this one person to come along and save everybody, and we going to stop.
Oh.
But that's just my take on it.
So the people is waiting for Superman. That's what you're saying, right?
That's how it appears. We keep waiting for a Superman, something that's going to come in and stop everything, you know. But we don't want to collectively do it. You know, it's almost like everybody wants to. They don't want to do work.
They don't want to put the work. Well, Gibson said, man, it doesn't work is less than an infidel. It's something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
So that doesn't mean a man that can't find a job is a man if they're talking about a person that doesn't want to. So, you know, faith without work is dead, right?
Absolutely.
Are you praying, folks? Waiting. I think you're supposed to pray and do something. That's my take on it. Yeah, I'm not a preacher or pope or, you know, nothing like that. But it doesn't make sense just to pray and do nothing. And these are our people that I'm talking about. They come from somebody, something, some human being. We have a duty to reach out. And matter of fact, we have a duty from birth to give these people the information they need to avoid these pitfalls. So, and there's a lot of things that impact on a person's decision. I know that, or whether or not to, or how you're going to make money. You know, oh, we got another caller. Hello, welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello?
Hello. This is Kim. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Good evening, caller. Good evening, listeners. I agree with the caller was saying.
It's Paris.
There was a change. Right. It was a change around that 60s time. Because we had that community that was a community. And then right around that time, it started changing when everybody started getting this freedom about them. It seemed like that translated to what I want to say.
Do what you want.
Less, yeah. And less, what I want to say. Structure. It's like their priority changed. You know, things were different. They didn't have the same standards. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
A lot of standards changed. And it seems like when the standards change, it's kind of like changed the nature of the family, the nature of our neighborhood, and all that kind of stuff. Everything was different then. They didn't have the same amount of respect for the person next door walking down the street. And it showed in the way they treated each other or the way we treated each other, you know? And it's just common sense stuff at that. Even if, besides the way they treat the other person, the way they carry themselves in their house, a common sense thing would be like this. The city got an ordinance saying you keep your trash in the backyard. So eventually, people start saying, I don't feel like traveling this trash to my house. I'm going to keep my trash on the porch. You know, I'm going to keep my trash out here on the front. So now everybody that's your neighbor got to smell your trash when they come and sit out on that porch.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So that thing, you know, even though they didn't make a decision, you know, they weren't doing things to their neighbor. It affects their neighbor. You know what I mean? But it's their house. Right. They're doing what they want to do at their house.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's just an example of the standards changing and how it affects how we treat each other. That's a simple one. And then the other ones, the more extreme ones, is what you said. I'm going to shoot you because you stepped on my shoe and all that kind of stuff. You know?
Right. Murder is the solution to conflict. That's where we're at now, seems like. Conflict equals murder, you know, for the most part.
Right.
You know, they don't want to talk it out, which is the best way to do it. They don't respect each other, which is the best way to end conflict, right? You don't have to love that person, but you can respect them as a human being. You know, you can work that out without even using your fist. What's the problem here? You got to recognize when you are out of bounds, though. If you don't have rules, a set of standards that you say that we agree upon, then you know, you have your standard. If you come with this whack standard that I do what I want to do, I stepped on your foot, F you, I'm so-and-so. I'm running things around here. I kills people.
Right. That's what I agree with Paris about. It's like some people are trying to play, or they are not trying to play, but they are playing a role. They are that guy. They are that person. You know what I mean? I'm the guy that you don't mess with because, you know.
Right. The only thing about this role is when you get shot, you don't get back up.
Right.
You don't appear on next week's show or the next
mm-hmm.
movie. You understand what I'm saying? You don't get that opportunity. You're gone. And sometimes the shooter, he's gone. He got 25 to life somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Over some
yeah.
nonsense.
Yeah.
So, you know. They never go to, they talk about gun violence and things like that. And you know, the proliferation of gun violence in the community is the guns. Some people would say the gun's not the problem. It's the people who have the guns in their hands. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the police shootings. It's the gun in the hand of an individual, like the guy that shot Castillo. You could see he was terrified. He was going to kill somebody that day. Anybody that sneezed in front of him, he was going to kill. You know,
mm-hmm.
He probably shouldn't have been on the police force. You know, because there was nothing happening for him to use his weapon. In his mind, he used it. You know, he felt the need to use his weapon and fired repeatedly at close range. You know what I'm saying? So we got the same kind of situation on the street. We have weapons in the hand of people who are very emotionally immature, who are afraid, right? And so if
mm-hmm.
you're afraid of something's going to happen to you, and maybe you done something for something to happen to you, or you're just scared like that, you know, that's an accident waiting to happen. Not saying it's an accident that people shoot people, because you do, you know, they put a gun out, they shoot you, and that's on purpose. But I'm just saying that's a murder, a homicide, just waiting to happen. You know, so it's not the gun is the problem. The gun, to me, gives people the ability, it increases the lethality of an attack. You understand what I'm saying? Because I could kill you with my hands, but I got to get close to you to do that. Once you run away, you probably can get away. You know what I'm saying? But if I have a gun, you run away, I still got you. You know what I'm saying? So, and these things are going to kill you. With my hands, I might not be able to kill you if you fight back, if you hold, you know, if you do things like that, you know. So, we have to find a way to, I know we're in pain, we're afraid, we're traumatized in the community, but we need to find a way to take responsibility for what we do. And the responsibility is to raise people. Our responsibility in the community is to raise people with the knowledge and respect for life. And we haven't been good at that, because 499 folks, 2020, a couple hundred year before that, you know, not that 2019 was much better. You know what I'm saying? Because you still got a couple of hundred people dead. You know what I'm saying? We are failing as a community to protect ourselves. You know, and we're falling on prey to things like this here, drug on wars, war on drugs, people dropping white bombs in our community, knowing that these people are poor. Right? They want money. They already are acclimated toward getting high. So there's a certain amount of people going to just try this and become addicted to it because it's highly addicted. We fall in prey to things like that. And we need to strengthen our ethical and moral standards. That's your first defense against all of this nonsense. If we don't have that, then we run into this thing that we got now, this snowball that's rolling down this hill, and it keeps growing and growing and growing and growing up to till you get 499 murders. You know what I'm saying? So what we need to do is we need to arm ourselves, not with guns, with knowledge. And you got to put that knowledge in the beginning, from the beginning. in the union. I'm saying, like, it's a lot. I've seen good people make poor decisions before. You know, and, you know, they come from good families, and I'm sure their parents tell them, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. And I'm thinking a lot of people have parents like that. You know, some parents are off the door, off the chain, and a little loose with the children. But I'm saying, you know, I've seen people I know come from, you know, good backgrounds. Parents don't agree with some of the decisions they made. And but they made those decisions anyway, armed with that type of knowledge. You know what I'm saying? And but you do the best you can. But we got to make it fashionable. I had a friend that likes to say we're about fads. So we gotta make it a fad to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Oh, Stevie Thompson likes to say that. He said I like that. Yeah, once it becomes a fad doing being a decent person, we need to make that fashionable. Life, right. Not death. You know, instead of death, life. You know. Those who are
death
in support.
Death is the new trend. That's what's fashionable nowadays.
Right. That's what we need to do.
The whole bad and all of that. Yep.
Right. We need to make that fashionable. You know. Go ahead.
I hear that some people say love is, you know, what we're in need of. We're in short supply of love. And I take that to mean what you were just saying. You know, we got to love ourselves. And we want people to treat us the way, you know, the way we want to be treated.
Right.
You know what I mean? So in order to do that, we got to learn how to treat people the way we want to be treated so that they will respond the same to us. But we're doing just the opposite. We take everything as when someone treats us the wrong way, we gotta strike and everything like that, instead of like trying to share and trying to like, you know, trying to make things better. We go the opposite way.
Right. Right, we're hyperactive and super defensive and hyper offensive.
Reactive.
Right, reactive, right. Yeah. So, you know, that's a part of trauma, though. And, you know, and I'm not taking away from over the 400 years of trauma that the black community has undergone and continue to undergo in America, the world. I'm not taking anything from that, but even with that, we cannot let that define us. You know what I'm saying? We can't let that turn us into monsters, into cancer cells. You know what I'm saying? That's what we you know, we got to turn this thing around some kind of way. You know? Yeah, you see, you got going against you. You got your decision complicit with a process that was designed to basically take you out. You know, like roach baits. You know what I'm saying? Prison population went from 300,000 to 2.3 million. That's a lot of folk. You understand what I'm saying? Two-thirds of those are in there for drug offenses. Two-thirds of them drug offenses are people of color, they said. And we know we've seen what drug offenses have done to communities, you know, in America. You know, the addiction, the death, the destruction of the family, the unsupervised children growing up in intergenerational drug of families, the community. African Americans far more likely to be arrested for selling or possessing drugs than whites. You know, with all this stuff going on, how come we not looking at it like that? You know, how come our young men out here just blowing each other head off? You know what I'm saying? We can rationalize that due to unemployment and poverty, some people will turn to illegal, unethical means to earn money, thus falling victim to their double-edged solution and taking individuals, families, and the community down with them. Could it be that poverty and unemployment in some way hurt black folks more than slavery? We went from being targeted by white folks to be tortured, lynched, and murdered to charismatically romanticizing the targeting, lynching, and torturing and murdering of ourselves. As you said, death in some strange twist of events became a way of life for some, where self-esteem and a strange sense of self-preservation trumps the value of another man's life. Hell, it seems to trump the value of life point blank. It is almost as if freedom, and I use that term loosely, became a black hole that blinded, twisted, and scarred some of us so deeply that we can't get out of our own way. We appear to be free to exploit, corrupt, rape, and murder ourselves instead of edifying our very existence by creating and perpetuating ethical, moral, social, political, educational, spiritual goals that improve our quality of life. It would seem that if we can identify the snare of someone facilitating and perpetuating drugs and guns in our neighborhood and communities, we should be able to rationalize and see the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal nature of this assault. Yet, for a coin, some romanticize our damnation and continued descent into the bowels of a nation, becoming that which they say we all are, the personification of validation for the deranged idea that our lives need not be valued. Yet we live in this cesspool of social, psychological, spiritual dung. Some of our minds blown away from life's tribulations, traps and spells, and self-hung. Is it a matter of wealth over well-being, material acquisition by any means necessary? A community without boundaries will always be in a state of constant collisions. No respect of person, property, or life is a recipe for disaster. We live in a disaster area in a constant state of alert and emergency. We are constantly at war with one another, man against woman, brother against brother. If there were no demand for drugs in the neighborhood or community, there could be no facilitating and perpetuating drugs. Just because it's there doesn't mean you have to use it. I don't see long lines in the public library. Do you? You see people lining up to get in the library?
Nope.
Hell no. Something wrong with that. We don't want knowledge. We want to get our heads banged. Either way, we want to use drugs to get our heads banged, or we want to sell drugs and risk getting the back of our heads taken off. You can't water sheep from a poisonous well. If the flock is to grow, you must feed them what they needed to survive or live. There is no life in the death of the spirit, the soul of a man. Yet this is being perpetuated, you know, in a lot of inner cities. Philadelphia, Chicago, top of the heat. Unfortunately, they're not even the two biggest cities in the country. So, trying to get to You know, because I heard Meek Mills was saying something with some kids about stop banging or something. And he would give them a record deal or something like that. And I don't understand that concept that you can't be a gangbanger and an artist or a recording artist because you could die in the middle of a recording. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Q?
Why are you going to invest in you when, yeah, you're not a good investment.
Yeah, you're a poor investment. Why don't you understand that? Can't invest in you. You dead. Now I'm out of. I got all these tracks I can't use because I don't even have an artist. So you know, I guess the recoil was hell. You know, people dying, and no, we're not going back. We're not backing off of somebody killing one of us. I get that, but at some point, you got to stop the war. World War One ended. World War Two ended. The Civil War ended. You understand what I'm saying? The American Indian War ended. Those wars at some times ended with all the bloodshed, right? At some point, these wars have to end, and we have to seek peace, and we have to seek a way to heal and help each other. Now, I just look back at the slaves, and I was like, well, the chattel slaves had far less than modern-day black folks. In fact, in many ways, we are fortunate in comparison to them. You know what I'm saying? That I had, they were sleeping on dirt floors in the wintertime. They were forced to live and work together, and we appear to have been divided by our tribulations, ambitions, and desires, not to mention our disconnection from their struggle. Yet in heaven more, we appear to lack the moral fiber and mental fortitude of our ancestors who were stripped of everything they knew and believed. How is that possible? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You know, how was a man being treated like an animal, like a mule, able to, you know, have a sense of family, you know, they're breaking up his family, mating him, and doing all kinds of stuff, coming and taking his wife, some of them taking him, you understand what I'm saying, going through all of that, and those people had a sense of they had a strong sense of family and freedom. They never stopped that, you know, wanting that for the most part. Because I heard they fought all the time. Which makes sense. Because they wouldn't have all these slave laws, runaway slave laws, and, you know, all these things for slaves to keep suppressed slaves if they weren't rebellious. You know, a slave is supposed to rebel as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, those people, some of that was seen back in the 60s. You seen like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, brothers, Black Panther Party, they still struggling against unbeatable odds. So, but now, our struggles seem to be, you know, the same, but as far as we're concerned, we're face to face with our own image. We can't even get out our front door. You know what I'm saying? We can't walk down the street, you know, without all these things happening, being subjected to all this dope, violence, and disrespect. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, the standard is different now. You got people walk down the street smoking weed. No problem. And I'm not even talking about adults. You know, people don't care what they say. If you, so-and-so, they pull a gun out right there. They buy in the store. People trying to get their little chips, Chinese foods. When it's gunslinging time, it's on. Have nothing. They don't care about you being in there. So, you know. And I hear the old gangsters saying, talking about these new guys, how, you know, shaky they are with these guns, how quick they are to kill. So, we appear to lack the moral fiber and mental fortitude of our ancestors. If we had that, we'd be well on our way to something else, I think. As you say, that they dropped that bomb to break us when we looked like we might be coming into something, into some type of unity. You're right, because we was black and we was proud, you know what I'm saying? We was, had these handshakes. We had all this stuff going, starting anyway. Black Panther Party was saying, like, yo, y'all can't treat us this way. The law says this. You know, they, you know, essentially all that stuff was disrupted. COINTELPRO, you know, leaders killed. Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, many more. Killed our allies in the White House. So it makes me wonder, has our physiological and psychological and physical need for acceptance and desire to assimilate with our oppressor and his ancestors crippled our sense of unity and ethnic preservation, while historians, sociologists, and criminologists document our systemic demise? Are we not concerned with us? Are we only concerned with assimilating? Did that hurt us? Had a conversation with Mr. Jones, Kenny, and you go back to Black Wall Street. That was a group of black folks that had to work together. Came up with Black Wall Street. It was so independent, they didn't need anything from white folks. Now, I heard they were getting ready to just work, connect with a resource, directly with a resource. And before they were burnt down and murdered and burnt down over a lie. But what is it we want? Are we trying to, you know, imitate this cartoonish character that's been plastered all over the media about us? Because the real reality of people are dying. You know, it's not a movie. People are dying, spending the rest of their lives in jail, wheelchairs, and of course, some people do make it. You know, so they say Jay-Z used to work, you know, a couple of them rappers used to work, you know, but apparently Jay-Z had enough sense to know that that wasn't going to save his life. Eventually, he was going to get caught up some kind of way. And he flipped. 50 Cent, you know, whoever. How much time in prison must some of us waste before we open up our eyes? That's my question. How much time does it take for you to get it? Like if I hear guys say, I can do that time on my head. I can do that time. I can do that. Like, yo, I can't do one day in jail. On my head anyway. Like it ain't nothing. Like I'm no problem being here. No, it's a problem being there. How many of us have to die? How many lives have to be destroyed? Because it's time we stop. It's time we took a look at ourselves. A good look in the mirror. And we can acknowledge the man. We don't grow the cocaine. We don't have no poppy fields or no pharmaceutical companies. We sure don't. But one thing we have that makes all of those things important is desire, the demand for that. So you have a demand for that, then you're just a sprocket in the wheel of destruction. As Malcolm X said, if you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. So what are we responsible before for? You know, we can't just blame it on a white rock being dropped in the community, the guns being dropped in the community like that. Can just blame that. It takes a person to wield that gun. It takes a person to snort, shoot, smoke the drug. You know, we are responsible for the decisions we make. Whether you take responsibility or not, there are consequences for that. As my friend likes to say, if you don't make changes, changes will be made for you. And we are changing all the time, as the last poet said. We love to change, but we don't love change for revolution. Revolution does not mean tearing up your neighborhood, just for you folks listening. Revolution is a state of mind, changing your mind, your mental concept. Thinking and doing things to your benefit, to the benefit of you, your community, your family, and your people. Why this is beyond us, or appears to be beyond us, is beyond me. Well, some lot of tidal wave of decadence and destruction narrated by the 6 o'clock news in courtrooms, institutions, and becoming urban folklore. Y'all know the stories, you see it on all on the internet, right? YouTube. Got everybody on it. Wayne Perry, Black Mafia guys, Black Mafia family, Blackstone Rangers, Hoover, Larry Hoover, Tookie. All the destruction, self-destruction, and they had a little rap song out about that, but, you know, I guess that only lasts for as long as that song was fashionable, as you said. So how about we make it fashionable to live and to live in peace amongst each other? And that has nothing to do with being it's not saying that you let somebody punch you in the mouth or nothing like that. We're saying that we don't make war. We don't start wars. But we fight in self-defense of our lives and the lives of the people we care about. So that makes sense. Fighting for drug territory, which is killing us. The fighting is killing us because that's somebody's brother, somebody's son, somebody's father. That's too much killing, y'all. We can't be happy with so much plight. We cannot. Anyway, is that all we are living for? Is it some of us? I know some of us want more than that. We have become our own enemy, driving a wedge of distrust and apprehension and self-hatred between us. We've got to do better. There's a saying, when I became a man, I put away my childish ways. Yes, we are descendants of oppression and tyranny, heirs to no kingdom yet subjected to a harsh one, a kingdom that looks down on us, if it looks at us at all. Still, we remain men under the same sun and moon as our oppressor. We were once kings and queens of the earth. Now we have been made low. We were once masters of the sciences. Not so long time ago. No excuse that man put the drugs and guns in the community to entice us to use or sell it, to allow yourself to be subdued by it, to allow your community to become subdued by its cancer. Self-care begins with caring for you, your family, your community, and your people. Self-destruction is not caring for yourself, your family, and your community. As the brother said, stop looking for someone to save you from you. Do something besides pointing a finger, pointing a gun, or the way to the next super high. Embrace life and life all around you, and maybe life will snatch you or someone from the gate of death. Change you and change the world around you, one person at a time. Even a child needs to learn how to respond, react, and address his problems. That is a part of how the child becomes a responsible adult. We can learn from the mistakes of those who came before us and those who are before us as well, if we choose to. Life is the ultimate classroom, and it has many lessons, like rain to the roots of a tree, if we absorb them. Learning has no ending. I say we put away our childish ways and take our rightful place in our own lives. Keep our heads out of the gutter, and maybe it will be difficult for the man to put his foot on our necks. It's past time to bury the hatchet and stop cutting our own throats. All the marching in the world won't help us if we continue on this present path of destruction. Stop talking the talk and get to walking the walk. Exercise the one freedom we all truly have, the freedom to make a decision, to choose what kind of person or people we are going to be. The freedom to choose, decide what we are willing to stand for and what we are not willing to fall for from this day and the next day forward. It's time for us to do something. So that's my spiel for the night. And, you know, I want to thank Q and P for calling in. Anybody else want to say anything? We only have 5 minutes left. And to anybody listening, take heed. Make a personal assessment of you, person closest to you, and your community, what you can do to help the people in your community, and vice versa. Everybody's trying to do something like that, and I'm not talking about using people. I'm talking about actually helping people do better. And it's going to take a village, not just to raise a child, to raise a village, because we need to build our village back up. Because right now, our village is on fire. We need to put the fire out, calm down, and put our heads together, because we, our ancestors of kings and queens of the world, scientists, that's where we come from. So, till next week, y'all. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Mr. Kenny Jones, Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Production, our two callers, Q and Paris, and you guys that called in and listened in, you guys who download and listen. I want to thank everybody. But I want to encourage everybody to start trying to do something, whatever, however, so small a thing, anything but what we've been doing here recently. Let's turn back the murder rate. Let's turn back the addiction rate. Let's turn back the disrespect, the dishonor that we have in our community. And let's change it. Let's build a village of respect where we can be safe amongst each other, at least. Until next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on